Cape Talk. Family Matters.
Right now, though, it is time for us to welcome today's guest for Family Matters. And our focus today is on dealing with the grief of losing a spouse. Talking about bereavement, both from the perspective of the surviving spouse and from the perspective of their friends wanting to know how best to support them. And this is prompted really by an email I received from our listener, Stella, some time ago. And I want to thank her for mailing me to raise the issue. Stella was expressing the wish that there was just more advice available on how to support people who are going through this devastating experience. And to help us contemplate the topic and hopefully share some of that advice, I'm delighted to welcome in studio Laurie Schifrin, who is a clinical therapist working in private practice, who specializes in a number of fields, including dealing with grief and loss. Laurie, it's great to have you with us.
Hi, Pippa. Thanks so much for having me in the studio again. It's great to be here.
Nice to have you back again. In the immediate aftermath of losing a spouse, Laurie, it must feel like the entire world has come untethered, that especially for those where the loss came out of the blue, they haven't had time to mentally prepare for themselves for what was coming. And we often hear it said that people go through the stages of grief, the bargaining, the anger, the denial, etc. But we also equally are told not everybody goes through all five stages in order, in any timeline. It's different for every person, isn't it?
Absolutely, Pippa. I think one thing to remember is that these stages that we talk about are pretty much guides for people to understand what they're going through, and for people that aren't experiencing it to be able to support other people in terms of what they may be going through. The stages are also not linear, so one doesn't particularly go through, you know, 1 week they're angry, the next week, you know, they're feeling a bit depressed. They can sort of chop and change throughout one's day or over time. So I think that it's more a guide, I think, to really understand what people can be going through.
Okay. The unfortunate point is that at the time when someone is most distraught and most feeling lost in the world, they have to make really big decisions. And I'm not talking here just about organizing a funeral and what sort of memorial is going to be held, but life-changing decisions around finances, about what happens to the home that you shared, what happens for the dependents who relied on you, loads and loads of paperwork. And it's a very vulnerable time for many people, particularly, I think, for women of a certain age, many of whom were raised in a world in which men tackled the finances and it was left to them. So a widow, for example, might find herself sitting with all of this in her lap for the first time ever, having to contemplate the family's finances. That also, unfortunately, makes them vulnerable to exploitation by people who spot that and would take advantage of it. What's your advice from that perspective in terms of practical ways of helping somebody cope at this time?
I think it's important that we don't underestimate what someone is going through in terms of any kind of loss they may be experiencing, and particularly people who have perhaps being quite dependent on their spouses. I think it's important to get, whether it's friends or family, on board that can support them through that. Even professional advice, but, you know, preferably if it's somebody that you kind of have some kind of a connection with, or it's through somebody you know, it's often easier that you feel more at ease that they're not going to exploit you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would encourage people in general to get clued up on their policies that they have, you know, obviously people with living spouses, but I think it's, you know, use this as an opportunity to really look into that and get clued up and educated around how these things operate. But I think in terms of, you know, somebody who's thrown into that sort of chaos and trauma, I think that it's ready to reach out and offer support and get people who are, you know, maybe close to you, but not going through the same ordeal as you, to kind of have that sort of fresh perspective to be able to assist. Because I think we can't underestimate, and I've learned this time and time again, sitting with clients that are that are bereaved, you know, they're not thinking straight. They're maybe not sleeping. They're not eating. They're anxious. I think it's really hard to think straight, and having to deal with all of these sorts of things as well can also prolong or interrupt the grieving process, because often we have to dive right in at the start to deal with all of these things. Even something like funerals, you're chasing up policies and things like that, really admin kinds of tasks, but that's where the focus is at, and it sort of pushes the emotional side out for a while. And sometimes only after that can one really stop and take it all in and start that kind of process. So it's really a loaded issue.
Yeah, because I hear what you're saying, that there's, in a way, it acts as something to keep you focused on and distracted from the actual sitting with the grief, as it were, and contemplating and recognizing what is actually happening in your life. Yeah.
Yes.
Now, practical help is something I think many people feel eager to do. They love the idea of, I'm going to take a meal around, I'm going to offer to walk the dogs, or whatever it may be. I am going to help put her in touch with somebody who has financial advice. But I think that helps people cope because they feel like they're doing something meaningful. The big challenge is often what to say to somebody who has just lost the love of their life, Laurie. And people just, they often use the words, there are no words. And there was a beautiful piece shared on Facebook within the last couple of days from a parent reflecting on the suicide of a child 10 years ago, saying that that phrase, there are no words, was one of the most painful and almost offensive thing that people said to him at the time, because he wanted to say to them, there are lots of words, make the effort to find them. What's your advice for a friend wanting to support somebody who's just been bereaved?
I think it's a really sensitive topic, and you bring in the loss of a child. And so I see, you know, we're talking about the loss of a spouse, but I think whether it's death, whether it's divorce, people, you know, naturally feel uncomfortable, in particular around issues surrounding death. And I think that the person who's bereaved, and from what I've gained from knowledge-wise from my clients who've been going through this, is also to basically be open to the person, be sensitive to what the person's going through, and also for those people to also bear in mind that people don't know what is right or what they would want them to say, and everybody's so different. And sometimes I find it best to suggest that people are just real, particularly if it's somebody close to you. It's just to be real with them and say to them, you know, do you want to talk about this? You know, do you feel like talking, or you know, do you want me to just sit here? What do you want? What do you need? And I don't always know if there's a right or wrong, because it's such an individual process. Somebody may say to somebody, oh, well, you must feel like this and that. And that may be presumptuous. Or telling people, I'm thinking of you, when you maybe haven't been in contact for 3 months with them. Mm. And they're going to feel as though, well, that's nonsense. Because if you were thinking of me, you'd pick up the phone or send me a text or something. Mm. So I think to be real, I think that if you're being open and transparent with people both ways, both the bereaved and those supporting, when you can, and I know that it's not always the easiest and it may not always feel the right thing for everybody, but just having sat with people in that space where they are confronted with that, where they're saying, well, things are awkward and people are saying awkward things, is to really put it into a general perspective. Not everyone's going to get it right all the time, and it's not always the right thing for that person. But I find being real, and that's what the beauty is about being in a clinical space, to just be able to be real, and for that bereaved person to just be themselves and say, you know what, actually this is what will help, or please tell people to stop bringing food. It may be, you know, that they can just be authentic in that moment.
I mean, here's a message on our SMS line from Mark in Rondebosch saying the worst statement is, I'm sorry, I know what you're going through. Mark's comment is, no loss of a loved one is ever the same, and regardless, nobody would ever know what they're going through at that moment.
I absolutely concur with that. And I think that that's, you know, something that I value when people come into my therapeutic space, is that they're the expert. You know, I may, you know, if we're talking about something that maybe I, in my own personal life, if I think in that moment, wow, you know, I've also experienced something, I would never think, well, let me share that, because, you know, we can relate. And, you know, even something like a death of a spouse or a divorce, two are never the same, because it's different people that are experiencing these things. There's different emotions involved. And I think it's, yeah, people, I also believe that people aren't trying to be hurtful, you know, and that there are so many emotions going on within, you know, with somebody that is bereaved, or, you know, whether it's a shock that the person's passed away or something like that. There are so many things happening that people genuinely don't feel, they feel quite uncomfortable, yet want to be there and want to support and want to help out and do the right thing, as you know, but we don't know what the right thing is. And sometimes I think it's just best, as I've said, to kind of approach that person lovingly and kindly and say, you know, I want to be here. What is there?
What kind of help do you need?
And I think that person then needs to kind of see it for what it is, and you know, and then be able to, you know, say, look, this, I need nothing, or I want to talk about my husband, I miss him so much, or can you just sit here with me? I'm just quite lonely.
Oh, I don't want to talk about it. It's too painful right now. Yeah. If you've just joined us late to the conversation, my guest in studio is Laurie Schifrin, who is a clinical therapist working in private practice, who specializes in dealing with grief and loss, and talking about bereavement, how to support our friends when they go through it. The issue of friends can be a tricky one, Laurie. I've often heard it said, when people speak about divorce, who gets the friends? ends in the divorce. But it's not limited to divorce. It can be very difficult for someone who is suddenly single again, where all of their friends are still in couples, and might feel uncomfortable being in that position. Quite difficult to keep nurturing those friendships, particularly, for example, a widow who has lost her husband might feel worse going out with someone who still has a loving relationship with her husband. What's your best advice on how to navigate that particular situation?
I think same applies in the sense that everybody, you know, well, some people may, you know, may feel, you know, I hope that I never have to be, I don't want to be invited out. Don't invite me out on a Saturday night when everybody's in their couples and out for dinner. I'll feel uncomfortable. Or other people who just, you know, are still, they are their friends. So, it may be hard at first, but irrespective, they still would like to be a part of that. And I think, again, for people who want to support, is not to be presumptuous. Don't think that you know whether the person would be comfortable or wants to be there or doesn't. Again, transparent conversation, as hard as that is for both parties maybe, but I think to say, you know, we'd love you to join. You know that, you know, you're a great friend of ours, and yes, we miss the partner and so on, but nothing has to change, even though the person may be in the position and may feel like things have changed and they may still be uncomfortable, is let it be up to them. Don't make the decision. Don't stop including them.
Mm.
But have the conversation, because again, if they don't want to be included, rather have that discussion, that you don't have to keep asking them and then they awkwardly have to decline or feel that they need to come up with some reasons because they don't want to offend. When I think you cut through all of that, all the gray areas, it's so much easier for people to be real and to be supported in the way that they want to be supported, not the way that we think they want to be supported.
So important. I mean, there's a heartbreaking message in on our WhatsApp line from someone saying, I lost my husband 3 years ago and the grief is worse now than it was at the time it happened. It's more raw, more sore. I keep wondering if this grief will lessen or change over time. I mean, it's a really difficult message. Mm. I can just, I can't begin to imagine what that person's going through. Is that normal? I mean, there is no normal. As we said, there is no blueprint for this, for the grieving process.
I think, absolutely, that's it. You know, and I think that, you know, everybody's grief looks different, and you use that word blueprint, and I love that because it is so different. But I think it also, you know, sometimes it's external factors that can make the grief seem worse or feel more painful. You know, if, say, you've got kids or something, and, you know, they're growing up and they're missing out, and something like that may trigger it to start feeling more difficult. So I think it's important for people who are in the position to just reflect as well on what has changed. Have there been factors that have changed? Because I think it's important to deal with them and address them in whatever shape or form that is, you know, for those individuals. But I think it's really helpful to get a bit of perspective on why it may feel like that. Because it's not right or wrong, but what's going to be done? How can they be supported? What do they need to sort of manage that? Because obviously if it feels worse, I would imagine from day to day, life just would feel that much harder.
Such an also pertinent anonymous WhatsApp in here, saying particularly valid to the practice of special days like the anniversary and the birthday. My experience has been that friends always want to do something with me on that day, and I appreciate the thought from whence it comes, but really all I want to do is be on my own on those days.
I think that I always discuss with my clients, especially the firsts. But that's not to say that the seconds and the thirds and the fourth, you know, birthdays, anniversaries, you name it, are just as painful. And again, I think the notion of not being presumptuous, not assuming that, you know, because we feel like we need to be doing something or need to be needed or whatever it's about, that person needs a party or needs a cake. And I think being very sensitive on those days and, you know, when you contact and wish them happy birthday, it's not really a happy birthday, I would imagine. And that's the feedback I get. I wish people would not say happy birthday, have an awesome day. It's not an awesome day. It's my first birthday without my partner or my whomever. And it's a really terrible, terrible day, I think. And, you know, perhaps you, every year you did something special, you were spoiled, you wake up alone. Now it's very different. I think people to be sensitive. And again, the realness factor for me, it's almost like the safest way to go, because if you're being real, not that we ever mean harm, but I think if you're being real and you're opening it up and you're letting the person tell you what do they need, because what they would need having asked a spouse on their first birthday without them versus what you would need may look very different.
Interesting comment here on the WhatsApp line again from someone saying, people often say when a parent has died, things like they're in a better place, or at least they're no longer suffering, or bring in elements of their own faith. It's a tricky one. So you may, as the friend, have a very strong conviction about what you think or believe has happened to the person who's passed away. It's not necessarily shared by their partner. And Laurie, I would imagine that's a very tricky one if people try and impose their own belief system onto you in a time of grieving.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, people handle those kinds of things differently. I've had clients share those kinds of experiences with me, and sometimes they just politely nod and thank you and don't really get into it and are able to kind of detach from that and not feel, well, I need to, you know, be like, get my back up about it and respond. And other people just will turn around and say, you know, that's actually unnecessary, or that's you know. But again, I think to look at it, that people, it is one of these, almost as though it's a taboo subject, because it makes people so uncomfortable that they're so scared, I think, to upset the person unintentionally again. You know, so if we talk about the person, are they going to burst into tears in front of me? And then I'm going to have to kind of put them back together. I think that, you know, there's so many feelings and opinions and thoughts when it comes to engaging with people. And with my clients, I find that they will come and share these stories with me because they say, you know, It's so hard. It really is hard to manage everybody's ways that they think they should be, you know, engaging with me. And it's kind of also working through that, and just for them to have the space to get some perspective and to sort of tailor it down to what do they need, and then empowering them to be able to very politely with the people closest to say, look, this is what I do need, or I do actually need a bit of space, or I'd prefer if you didn't come over. And sometimes that's hard to do. But I think it's one of those things that, you know, you might find in the long run is a little more helpful.
It's interesting because I'm sitting here thinking what you're talking about is allowing somebody the space to just manage their own grieving process and not have to be worrying about how anybody else is feeling and their insecurities about what to say to you. To just say sometimes giving them the space to just be and sit with their own grief is the best thing you can do. I don't want us to finish and run out of time, Laurie, without talking about the role that grief counseling can play. Does everybody need grief counseling when they go through a trauma? Are there signs that indicate perhaps it would be worth going to see someone and get a little bit of help and just have a sounding board to chat to?
I don't feel that everybody needs it or would find it useful. I think that it's very subjective. If you feel like you're not coping, or you feel like you need somebody with a fresh perspective, or somebody that's not involved or close to home, where you can go there and talk about these sorts of things, you know, that my sister or my friend is just, you know, I don't know how to manage, or literally you don't want the whole world to know that you literally can't get out of bed every single morning. And so sometimes it's just about that. It's a space to work through it. It's a space to share. Sometimes for people who are really stuck in sort of complicated grief, we call it, and may need to kind of work through that and talk through that and come to a point where life is a little manageable, then if you're feeling like that, then you may find it really helpful.
And quickly, in the 30 seconds we've got left, you do a very interesting thing. You've recently introduced the concept of walk and talk therapy. So rather than asking someone to come and sit in an office with you or lie on a couch as we see in pictures in the movies, you get them outside and do walking therapy together. Quickly tell us how
Correct,
it works.
Correct, Pippa. I've just recently added that, and it's quite exciting. I think it's quite an unconventional form of therapy, but for some people, particularly I find when I do work around food, a relationship with food and body, that people find it really helpful to be out, to be moving. It's by no means a workout, but really to be out in the fresh air. And often people find the conversation actually flows easier for them. They may find it not as head on as counseling. I don't put people to lie down on a couch, but, regardless, it's really fun and they find it quite, sort of uninvasive, really.
If you'd like to explore that possibility or reach out to our guest, Laurie Schifrin is her name, and her website is laurieschifrin.co.za, LaurieSHIFRIN. Laurie, thank you so much for being with us today and sharing a very informed perspective on bereavement. Appreciate
Thanks so
your
much,
time.
Prepare.